Welcome to recoverydaily.com, your daily haven of hope and healing. Here, we embrace the journey of living one day at a time. Join us as we share stories, insights, and the gentle reminders that guide us on the path to recovery. So, take a deep breath, settle in, and let's begin today's step toward serenity.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jim P., and I'm your host for today's episode of Living One Day at a Time. Today's title is Step One, and that's what we're going to be covering today. But before we get started, I want to introduce our guest co-host. His name is Keith W. And Keith, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hiya, Jim. Thanks for having me today. My name is Keith, and I'm in the program. I am knocking on the door of about 6 months sober, and I'm going through the steps slowly, but I've been around the program on and off for about 10 years. And like I said, this time around, I have about 6 months and I'm starting to feel better. The haze is starting to clear and I'm very grateful to be here today. So thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you, Keith. As I said, today's episode is on step one. Now, if you remember our last episode where we talked about how you can get started, step one was not something that you had to do right away. You needed to take some time to get to learn about the program, what's going on, meet some people, start going to meetings, stop drinking, drugging, or whatever it is that you're doing, you know, one day at a time. But now it's time to turn our attention to making the transition from that life that we lived day by day, where we couldn't predict how our day was going to end, into the life of recovery. And recovery, as we've talked about before, is a lifestyle that where we live one day at a time. We use the tools, the principles that we learn in the steps in order to do that. And so we go through the steps learning those, and we build on each step as we do them. You can't take them out of order. You have to start at one and go through with 12. And of course, we suggest that you do that with somebody. Now, I'm going to explain how to work the step, but I would encourage you to do that, even if you're going to do it the way I lay out, that you do that with a sponsor and then do whatever he might want to add to that, you know, and discuss it with him. And so now let's talk about step one. Step one, of course, is I admitted I was, and you can fill in the blank, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict, I'm a gambler, I'm an overeater, I'm a sex, whatever it is that you're dealing with, I am that, and my life has become unmanageable. So there's two parts to this step, and we're going to cover both parts. Now, the first one, I'm an alcoholic. For many people, including myself, it's hard to make that admission that I'm an alcoholic. Now, obviously, situations in your life may have pointed in that direction. That's why you're in AA now, or NA, or wherever it is that you are. You know you need help, and it might be this problem, but are you really an alcoholic or an addict or whatever? Most of us have a picture in our mind of what that means, what it means to be an alcoholic. Like when I came into the program of AA, I thought an alcoholic was a person that was what we used to call a wino, an old man that drank wine out of a brown paper bag and slept next to the dumpster in the alleys. And that's what it was. And in my mind, as long as I didn't reach that level, then how could I be an alcoholic? I have a place to stay, even if it's only my van, you know, but I'm not on the street. I'm not laying next to the dumpster. And most of us have that kind of image of what we think an alcoholic is or an addict or whatever. But the truth is that has nothing to do with it. And sometimes when we come into the program, and like I've suggested, you need to start listening to people talk and talk about their, you know, tell about their experiences. You might say to yourself, well, I've never done those things. That's never happened to me. I haven't gotten a DUI. I haven't set the Christmas tree on fire. So how can I be an alcoholic? In the beginning, let me give you a little history of step one. When we first came up with step one and we said, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to recognize that you are this thing. The only people that we could actually get to agree to that were the people that had reached the kind of bottom that made it almost impossible to recognize that they weren't an alcoholic. These are people that had lost everything, perhaps more than once, and now they were in the sanatorium, and we would go to them and offer them this program. And for them, it was fairly easy to make this admission, especially when the people that were coming to talk to them had probably stayed in the same sanitarium, and they could say, well, I was where you were, and now we would like to share with you what we've done, but first you have to admit that you have this problem, and I'm gonna go deeper into that. Of course, since then, the bottom for people has gone up. I mean, there are still people that go to that level, but now, fortunately, there are people that, as we talked about last time, will get off the elevator or the roller coaster, whatever analogy you want to use, early. They don't go all the way to the bottom. And so maybe you haven't had all of those experiences, but your experiences have basically been, when I started it, it was fun, then it turned into fun but with problems, and then it became problems. Now, you could still have your family, your car in the garage, and all that kind of stuff in your job, but as we talked about before, all of those things are suffering, and you kind of have realized that those things are suffering because of your addiction. And so you've decided to come in. Now, if you say to yourself you're not an alcoholic and you want to go out and try it some more, what I would suggest is listen to what it really means to be an alcoholic or a drug addict or whatever. What does it mean when we say that? You know, it's not enough to say that I'm that based on my experiences. For one, I think we have a built-in forgetter. The farther away we get from bad times, the less bad they seem. It's just the way we're built biologically. We are not built to remember pain. And so the farther away we get from it, the less painful it seems. And then it's real easy to romanticize about the early days of our drinking and using, because for most of us, they were fun. Our addiction allowed us to do things that we couldn't do before. It made us feel comfortable and happy and fun and a part of something and all of that. But, you know, that didn't last. But I think it's the dream of every addict, alcoholic, or whatever, that someday we could recapture that spirit. But because of the truth of what addiction is, that's impossible. Those days are not going to come back. There is no happy ending to addiction, regardless of what it is. There's no happy ending. So, but why is that? Well, we very early on recognized that alcoholism, and come to learn that the other addictions, we call it a disease, but you can call it a malady or an affliction or a syndrome, whatever it is you want to call it, but there's a physical component to it and there's a mental component. And so first, let me talk about the physical component and give you some examples. With alcohol, the average person, when they take a drink of alcohol, and this is almost everybody, when they have a drink of alcohol, it feels good. It makes you, your inhibitions come down a little bit. It makes you feel better, relaxed. It's easier to talk. It's easier to laugh. It's easier to be funny. I mean, it's just, it is a pleasant experience. But for the average person, when they have half of that second drink, they start to feel woozy. They start to feel a little out of control, and that's disconcerting. That's not fun. And they will normally stop there. Now, sometimes if they're drinking a little too quickly, they'll go beyond that, and they will get drunk. But they'll never do it again.
Wait, you're saying that some people have the ability to stop drinking at a moment's notice?
Yes, some people.
Amazing.
I know, it is amazing, you know, especially to the alcoholic. And so for us, there's something physically that happens to us. When we take that first drink and we have the same sensation, we think to ourselves, well, this feels really good. Let me have another one, because it's probably going to feel even better. And that's a fair thing to think if you've never drank before. But for us, we drink that second one, and we don't dislike the feeling. We enjoy that feeling that comes with that second drink. And then we have the overwhelming desire to have another one. You may have heard the saying, one is too many and a thousand's not enough, but it doesn't work that way. It works, when I have this one, when I finish it, I want another one. I need one more, and then I need one more, and then it turns into a thousand. I don't start off thinking I want a thousand, but I'll end up there once I start. There's something different about me physically that when I take a drink, when an alcoholic takes a drink, they want another one. And so it sets off a chain reaction that normal people don't experience. The same is true with narcotic, whether it's barbiturates or opioids, whatever. Normal people do not like the feeling that comes from doing more than just a little bit. You know, they may enjoy the initial feeling, but they don't enjoy going beyond that. The addict wants to go farther. The addict feels like, this is who I'm supposed to be. This is who I'm supposed to feel like. And let me have some more, because it has to be better. And so off they go. And so that's true with any addiction, whether it's gambling or if you're a sex addict or whatever. I mean, there's something happens to us physically that when we engage in our addiction, we have the overwhelming desire to have more. And so that's why, like for an alcoholic, even in the beginning, we tend to get drunk every time we drink. I mean, we may try to hold off and we may have some success with that in the beginning, but generally we don't. We always wind up drinking more than what we intended to. And that's one of the clear signs, one of the clear symptoms of addiction, that we do more than what we want to, what we set out to do, because we can't stop ourselves. And so that's the hallmark symptom of addiction, is that when we start, we can't stop till we either pass out or run out or whatever. And so that defines us. Now, if you can look back in your past and say, that's true for me, it doesn't matter if you've been drinking a year or 10 years or 20 years, or what has happened in your life, maybe you've been able to manage not to get the DUI, not to set the Christmas tree on fire, or whatever. When you drink, you always drink more than what you intended to. And, of course, that kind of drinking causes its own problems. Eventually, it leads to blackouts, or it leads to you driving while you're drinking, or whatever. And then the other problems can happen because of that. But the problems themselves are not the symptom. The symptom is that you drank too much when you shouldn't have, or even when you didn't want to. So that's the very first hallmark symptom of addiction. Keith, do you have a question?
So the first part of the first step is you admitting to yourself that you're an alcoholic, not the judge telling you
right
that you need to go to meetings, or your wife telling you, or your friends telling you that you're an alcoholic, but it's you admitting to yourself that you're an alcoholic. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. You have to admit it to yourself. You have to come to grips with that. There's a wonderful show on TV called Intervention, and where the family shows up and the friends and all that, and they do a so-called intervention with the alcoholic or the addict, and through emotions and stuff like that and wanting to please everybody, they'll agree to go to treatment and, you know, happy ending. But then during the credits, you'll see, but 6 months later, they left and got drunk and they're dead. I mean,
pretty much every time.
Yeah,
right?
that's pretty much every episode. Right, pretty much every episode. So it is something that you have to come to the conclusion for yourself. And so it says, we admitted, they're talking about us, we admitted that we were an alcoholic. And so that's the decision that you have to come to. So the first place to start is with that first symptom of addiction. Do I do more than what I intend to do? Or do I do that a lot? You know, maybe I don't drink every day. Maybe I only drink on the weekends. But whenever I drink more than what I set out to. I tell myself, I'm only going to do this much because I don't want to make a fool of myself. I want to remember the evening. I want to enjoy the wedding, whatever it is. But yet, you drink more, and whatever problems ensue from that. Now, the second part of the symptom, and my life became unmanageable. This is the insidious one. See, the first one, as long as you didn't take a drink, you don't have a problem. If you could stop yourself from drinking, then you would never experience that desire to drink more and more and more and more and more. But the second symptom, second part of the step is, and my life has become unmanageable. So why has it become unmanageable? Why can I not predict how my life is going to go, especially when it comes to my addiction? Well, the second part is that there is a mental twist, however you wanted to define that, but it is a mental thing, that when we're not drinking or drugging or overeating or whatever it is our addiction is, we become increasingly restless, irritable, and discontented. And that's not based on reality, that's based on our perspective of reality, our view of reality. You know, that wonderful job that we got and that we were so excited about becomes too hard or too much, or they don't recognize my talents or whatever it is, and we've become unhappy with our work. And the spouse that we married, who was the most wonderful person on the planet, now I can't stand them. But nothing has changed. The only thing has changed is your perspective about it. And so over time, increasingly, you'll become so unhappy with your life that you'll decide, I have to do something to feel good. And of course, we know what is going to do that. We know when we take that drink, when we take that hit, we're going to feel better. We'll tell ourselves, I'm only going to do a little. I've learned from my mistakes. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do too much. I'm only going to spend $20 on it. I'm only spend $100 at the racetrack or whatever it is. But again, once you start, the other symptom kicks in, and then you're off to the races. And so that's the insidious part of it, is that our mind will take us to a place where doing the drug, doing the alcohol, seems to be a good idea. Now, years ago, there was an article in Time magazine about alcoholism. And they were trying to explain, because it is a bit baffling, that how can you say stop drinking for 6 months or a year or whatever, and then go back to it, even under the guise that I'm so miserable, I need, you know, why can't you remember how bad it was, and based on that information, not do it? And Time magazine described it as, we seem to have a hole in our memory when it comes to our addiction, that the knowledge of how bad it was, even the knowledge that we wanted to stop, is gone. We can't bring it with sufficient force from our memory to act on it. We can't say to ourselves, I don't want to go through that again. That's gone. Somehow it's gone. And so when it becomes a good idea to do it, there's nothing in our memory to tell us it's a bad idea.
And we're talking about people who have been in rehab and have been in prison and have lost everything due to alcoholism and addiction, and they have told themselves time and time again, I've learned my lesson, I'm not gonna use or gamble or drink again, and it keeps creeping up on them until the craving gets overwhelming. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's a good way to put it, is that we get to a place where it seems like it's the only alternative. We are so miserable that it's the only alternative, and we can't bring from our memory why we wanted to even stop in the first place, why we're not doing it in the first place. And so that's the second part, that my life has become unmanageable. It's become unmanageable because you can't control how being without it makes you feel. I mean, the worst thing an alcoholic can do for himself is to stop drinking and not do anything about it, not go get help, but just say, I'm going to stop, because you're going to go crazy and you will drink again. That happens to everybody that's an alcoholic. And so your life's unmanageable in the sense that you can't predict how long that's going to take. You can't predict when it's going to happen, and you can't predict what's going to happen when it does. Normally, once you do, you're off to the races again, and whatever you accomplished in that period of time, you're starting to tear it down. And then, of course, when you start drinking, you tear it down completely. And so that's what step one is all about, that I have a medical and psychological condition that normal people don't have.
And another thing is, we're talking about your life being unmanageable, not your career or outside accomplishments, because we've all known people who are highly successful, high levels of accomplishments, who are absolutely miserable and who cannot find that satisfaction through any substance or actions, and are just feel hollowed out inside, right?
Exactly. And so that's what we're up against, is this insidious disease, malady, disorder, whatever, however you want to describe it. And as far as we know, there is no known effective medical psychological treatment for it. In all of the books, if you go to a doctor, if you go to a psychiatrist, I mean, those are noble professions, as we talked about before, and they want to help you, but they don't know how. There's no medical treatment, there's no psychological protocol, no religious ceremony, there's nothing that we know of that will effectively treat the alcoholic or the addict or whatever. And so the good news is that we have found a way to get it under control. And that's through our program of recovery, the 12 steps. But it has to start with the foundation that you recognize what you're up against. You're up against what is formerly an incurable problem. And that being so, you're going to have to hope that there is a spiritual solution for your problem. Of course, the good news is that there is, and we're going to obviously talk about that more as we go forward. So that's step one. That's what it, when we say, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, and my life has become unmanageable, that's what we mean. That I have the symptoms of this illness. Just like if you start to cough and sneeze, you know that you at least have a cold, maybe the flu, maybe something else. But you know from the symptoms where to go, that you're going to have to treat the underlying problem. So the symptoms are there. And you have to ask yourself, do I have these symptoms in my life? And again, going back, if you are taking the position that, well, maybe you really are not, because you're not nearly as bad as the people you see in the program and stuff like that. So you're going to go back and you're going to try to gain control. And we actually recommend that you do that, bearing in mind what we have said about the illness. You know, try to limit how much you drink. You may be successful a day or two, but it won't last. You know, or limit when you drink. You may be successful for a little bit, but that won't last. And so you can see for yourself that the symptoms are there. But we would hope that if you see the symptoms now, you go ahead and take this first step where you admit to yourself that you have this problem. And because you have this problem, you don't have the ability to make the things that you want to happen in your life come about. It's just, there are no happy endings to active addiction or alcoholism. And so that's where you have to start. In one of our books, it says, this is the only step that you have to do 100%, because you have to fully buy into that this is who you are and that you need help that's not readily available. But we offer that help freely. That's step one. That's what we mean by step one. Those are the symptoms of the illness. Now, let's get into, how do you work this step? You still want to know more. You still, you know, you want to build your foundation for this step. Well, the first thing I would recommend to do is, each fellowship has their own book. Like in Alcoholics Anonymous, they have what's called the book Alcoholics Anonymous. They refer to it as the big book. In NA, there's the basic text, and every fellowship has their own book where they describe the symptoms in greater detail and clarity as it pertains to your illness, to what you're going through. So that's where I would start. In the big book, you would go to in the preface, there's a letter from Dr. Silkworth, who was the first doctor that came up with the theory that alcoholism and drug addiction was an illness, and he writes about the symptoms in more detail than what I've covered. And then the early chapters in that book are basically about the same thing. What are the symptoms and why is it a problem and all of that? And then, of course, in the big book, most of the big book is actually stories from other people and what they were like and how the symptoms played out in their life and how things changed for them. Basic Tech does the same thing. They have plenty of stories in every fellowship, their books, even our sister fellowship, Al-Anon, for those that are going through having an alcoholic in their life. They use the 12 steps because they themselves have a problem that's going on. And so that's where I would start, is reading that material. Now, if you don't read very well, find a sponsor that's willing to read it to you and talk about it, because that's how important it is. And there are people that are willing to do that if you need it.
There's also the audiobook on YouTube.
Yep,
that,
YouTube.
That we've got some really good readers on there. That and I've found that that it helps to hear it at, before or after reading. It really helps it to sort of sink in.
Yes, that's a great idea. And it's on Kindle and other ebooks and audiobooks. So if you are having a problem comprehending it, that's really what you need your sponsor for, because you can ask him to explain it to you and how it applies to your life, because that's the point. You need to be able to apply this knowledge to your life. Is it talking about you? And the main reason you need to do this is because some of the steps going forward at first glance are asking you to do things that you don't want to do. Now, I'm not going to get into those today. We'll talk about them as we get up to the steps. But as you, I'm sure you've probably glanced over them. And if you're like me, you thought, well, I'm going to skip that. I'm going to skip that one. That doesn't make sense. I'm not doing that. I can't see any good coming from that. But there is, and we'll talk about it when we get to those steps. But you need to be armed with the knowledge that if you don't do these things, the only thing that's predictable about your life is that it's going to get worse. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you don't get help, it's going to get worse. It's gotten worse up to this point, and this is not the end of it. It will continue to get worse. As I like to say, there are no happy endings in addiction. So that would be the first thing that you do, is read the literature from your fellowship that goes into detail about your symptoms and how they play out in your life and the lives of other people who have the same addiction. The next thing you probably need to do is, as I told you in the last episode, is to listen to people in meetings and that are talking about their experience. You can readily hear the symptoms and their stories when they talk about it. They may not mention the symptom, but you'll see it. You'll recognize it in them. Or if you go to speaker meetings, that's even better, where you get to hear the whole story, what it was like and what's it like now and how they made the transition. If nothing else, it gives you a little bit of hope for the future, but it will help you readily see that, yes, these things are true for you. And then once you do that, you have a solid foundation for the rest of the steps and for your life. Now, let's say you've been in the program for a long time and you went, okay, so how do I make this principle a part of my daily life? I've gone through the steps and I need to make this a daily principle for me. Well, in one of our books, it says the purpose of all of these steps is to instill in you a greater humility. Now, for our purpose, humility means the ability to see myself as I really am. Now, that's incredibly difficult for people in addiction, because we have spent years explaining away why our life keeps turning out the way it does. We keep coming up with excuses and blaming it on people and all that. We literally create a fantasy world where what I'm doing is okay, it's everybody else. You know, if they should leave me, my drinking, everybody drinks, leave me alone. You know, why are you hassling me over this? And so humility does not come easily to us because we've created this fantasy life. And so this step should give you the first real open window to who you really are. And you need to hold on to that. And the last episode, I suggested that even if you don't believe in anything, start your day by saying, God, please keep me sober today. Keep me clean today. Keep me away from the racetrack. Whatever it is you're dealing with, please, God, help me with that. Because you recognize who you are and that you need help from outside of yourself. That's the basic principle of this program, of this step. is that when I start my day, I need to recognize what I am, who I am, and I need to carry that knowledge with me through the rest of my day. Now, for those that have spent some time in the program, who have really really worked the 12 steps and working these principles the best they come, there's still another part to step one that's important. In the early days, the way step one worked, it came as a result of somebody else doing their 12th step. As I said earlier, they would go down to the sanitarium, they'd ask the nurse, who are the two or three worst people on the ward? And they would go to them and they would tell them about their experience and what they went through and how they got help. And they would offer it to the other person. 99 out of 100 times, the person would immediately do their first step right there. I mean, yes, that's me. That's who I am. Please give me what you have. Well, we don't do a lot of that anymore. I mean, there are people that still go down to the detox center and talk to people or go to rehabs. And there's what are called institution meetings where people will go and tell their stories and hopefully somebody will get something out of it. What I would suggest is the 12th step actually calls on you to sponsor people to be a part of their lives. And what I would recommend is that when somebody asks you to be their sponsor, the very first time you meet with them, treat it as a 12th step call. You know, try to get them to a place immediately that they understand that they have a problem that they can't overcome. Now, they may not completely buy that to begin with, but you want to lay out the information for them. You want them to understand that what they're dealing with, and then encourage them to read the literature and stuff like that. So that's what I would suggest to long-term recovery, is that you never forget that you have a place in other people's first step. They often will do it by themselves. I mean, people will read our books and our literature and say, yes, that's me, and they'll come right on in. But often when they come in, they're just confused and scared and troubled, and they have no idea what's going on. And you would do well to treat them as a 12-step call and lay out all that information for them. All right, well, I think that about covered. Keith, do you have any questions?
No, other than the fact that these early days, the first step can seem a little daunting, but there's absolutely no judgments coming from anybody who's been around a long time, because we all ended up here, didn't we?
Yes, indeed. We all ended up here, and that's the point. And that's what I hope you can see right away. Like I've told you, to listen in meetings and go to speaker meetings. We have all been right in your same position, and we know exactly what you're going through. We know what your fears are. We know what your worries are. And we would love to share with you what we did to get through that period of time. We want to be there for you. And as I've said before, we do that because other people did it for us. There's no charge. There's nothing expected in return. We just want to give you the opportunity to experience the same miracle that we have experienced in our lives. And so with that, we're going to close. Please join us for our next episode, which is on step two. Have a good life till then.
Thank you for listening to Living One Day at a Time. If you have questions or comments, send them to Jim@recoverydaily.com.